Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I'm the advice columnist for Dan's Papers in the Hamptons and also in Palm Beach. I'm a national speaker. I am an expert guest on national radio and television, and I have a private practice here in really very sunny and nice New York City and East Hampton. So many people, when they know that I host the Ask Me Show, of course, they want to know what it is all about. And in one word, it is really about empowerment. We talk about all of the things that we can actually do to improve the quality of our lives and our relationships. So naturally, as a psychotherapist and sex therapist, we talk about mental health issues and sexuality and relationships. And the reality is, and I think this is something that cannot be stressed enough, is that we all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And despite what we might believe, nobody at all is immune from life's challenges. But the trick, the challenge for all of us is to be willing. And of course, I always use the tennis analogy. I've been playing competitive tennis all my life. And I think that has really helped me and really helped my mindset to remind myself and also to remind others to stay in the game of life. Now, we need to maybe change our strategies. Perhaps we need to hire a coach from time to time. But whether or not we're talking about sports or our relationships or lives, there are always going to be challenges. And my mantra, and it's a mantra that I've hoped that I have been able to convince you all to really not only think about, but to take in, is to be willing when life starts to get just way too difficult or way too challenging, to be willing to acknowledge, yes, we're having a horrible time, a terrible time, I don't have any family, I'm feeling lonely, I'm feeling disconnected, I may have just, you know, been laid off from my job, but be willing to acknowledge and address and take whatever steps that we may need to take. And I'm sure along taking the steps, there are also going to be a lot of missteps, but that's okay. As long as we are willing, as I say, and as my father, my late father, who was my mentor often on the courts, to really stay in the game of life. And I hope that I have convinced you over all of these years is that we don't need to take this journey on our own. And these days, I think it's a good thing. There's a lot more talk about mental health and coaches and therapists. However, we need to be very, very careful if we are deciding to work with a coach or a therapist or a so-called relationship expert, that we are choosing people who have the credentials and the expertise to be able to give us what it is that we actually need. And I've written a lot about, you know, there is a lot of harm that therapists and doctors and professionals can actually do. So again, whether or not we're assessing our relationships or whether we are really thinking about assessing our professional relationships with people, doctors, lawyers, accountants, we have to be very, very careful who it is that we let into our lives. So when you look at the people in your lives right now, hopefully you do, that you have people who you care about and who really care about your well-being and people who you can depend upon. So if you're looking at your family, if you happen to have a significant other or children or friends, like it, The real question is that, are these people largely positive? Which doesn't mean that we're not going to have differences and we're not going to have debates about all kinds of subjects. But what we need to remind ourselves is to say no to the things, the people, and places that steal our joy. And for those of you who know me and who work with me as my patients, you will know that I have a zero toxicity policy, which means that I don't want even a little bit of toxicity in my life, because the fact is that when you think about it, a little bit of poison, whether or not we're talking about poison, as we normally think about things, or poisonous people, they will kill us if we allow them to, one way or another. So again, this is one of the things, the weekly reminder that I ask you to really take a look at the people who are in your life, and maybe some need to go. And if you've tried to work things out and make amends, and if you're finding that the minuses clearly continue to outweigh the positives, then you have a decision that you need to make. So in my weekly How Are You Doing segment, looking at mental health, your depression, your anxiety, other psychiatric issues that you may be struggling with, how are you doing? Are you finding that the exercise and the meditation, perhaps those of you who are actually in therapy, are things moving along? Some of you may be taking medication. Again, I think it's about really being honest with ourselves, making sure that we are staying on a positive track as possible. And if you're finding that your mood, your depression, your anxiety, perhaps your substance abuse, the things are really, really feeling out of control, you have an opportunity every single week here on the Ask Beattie Show. You can call me live. The show is actually live, even though there is an archive section. The number here is 888-874-4888. If you have any question about your mental health, your relationship, your sex life, I mean, this is an opportunity for you to be able to talk to me directly. And what about your physical health? There are all these articles constantly telling us and reminding us about the importance of exercise, and you don't need to go to a gym or have a gym membership in order to exercise, and how exercise protects us. It protects us mentally and psychologically and psychiatrically and emotionally, and of course, physically. And I have always, frankly, depended on exercise in my life, because I find that if my mood is starting to get a little bit off, and if I know that it has to do, for example, with not having sufficient sun during the winter months, I've learned over the years, and I have a prescription, and my prescription is a lot of physical activity. Jim and I, we have weights in our various different poundage. And it really does make a difference. And I was just reading a study from Sweden before the show started. And the study was done by a psychiatrist who, again, was talking about the importance of taking X number of steps every single day to keep ourselves moving. And it really does. It really does make a difference. I'm sure that all of you have discovered, if you're having a bad day and you go out and you have a walk and you look at the trees and you look at the sky and you look at nature around you, that it almost always has a really, really positive impact on us physically and emotionally as well. And what about sleep? I mean, I find that people are up Morning, noon, and night, they're on their devices, they're on their phones, they're playing games. And the fact is that we do need approximately 7 to 8 hours of restful sleep, basically most nights. And are you being good to yourself? And this is one of the things that I'm constantly asking people, that I'm constantly asking my patients to be aware of. Of doing the things that are really in our best interest. So, what that means in a very, very concrete way is you're going around in your day to ask yourself the question, is this good for me? Whatever this is, the food that I'm eating, the people that I am interacting with, the work that I'm doing, am I living my life in ways that are actually in my best interest? And all of us, we need to pivot along the way. If we're finding that certain things are not working, it really boils down to asking ourselves the question about what are we going to do? Because I know people, and I've treated patients for many, many years, where they continue the downward cycle and then they wonder why they are not feeling better. So if things are going well, whatever it is you're doing, continue to do all of the things that are really helping you to live a happy and healthy and joyful life. And on the other hand, if you're really starting to see that this downward cycle of yours has become a very normative way that you're living, hopefully I have convinced you, and if I haven't convinced you in the past, that I can convince you today that you can actually make some moves, including reaching out and asking for help, which means really getting a second opinion from somebody who is qualified, from somebody who you can then learn to trust, who can help you get back on a positive, healthy path. Because the thing is that it's very, very difficult if our lives are not going as well as we would like, to either avoid the issues, pretend, the idea of just making believe or trying to convince ourselves and others that everything is okay. And yet the avoidance and the denial and the blame and self-blaming and defensiveness, all that really does, I mean, it doesn't change anything. It just keeps us in a downward spiral. And I found, and I really believe all these years, and I've been practicing, as many of you know now, for over 35 years, that my patients are really my heroes, because it takes a tremendous amount of courage to be willing to reach out and ask for help and be willing to finally, once and for all, to acknowledge, address, and resolve the various different things that continue to get in the way of our life, even though we can't change our history. But the history does, and it will continue to impact us unless, and I underscore this, unless we are prepared and willing to try to emotionally work through as best as we can the traumas, the abuse, what did and did not happen in our early lives. Because if we keep on ruminating about all of our history that really, really continues to depress us and keep us in a very, very anxious state, virtually impossible then to be able to really live fully in the moment. And that is why I have a lot of respect for people who are in my field who, use a variety of different theoretical modalities and adhere to a variety of different theoretical orientations. But I have found that we need to go back. We need to go back and at least talk about and put into as best a place as possible our history, what I call the unfinished business and skeletons in our closet, it continue to get in the way of our present, which is why I think that just seeing a therapist who adheres to behavioral therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy, I mean, these techniques, there's a lot of positives to these techniques, but I have never found in all these years that there is a shortcut in terms of being able to move forward, truly being able to move forward without trying to at least process the history and the past that does at times play havoc with our present. And I'm always interested in hearing what you think. Do you agree? Do you disagree? We can talk, we can debate. And of course, that's really what the purpose of this show is. And initially, when I had approached Dr. Gary Nell a number of years ago, I had hoped that this was going to be a call-in counseling show, because I had hosted a number of radio call-in counseling shows on various different mainstream radio stations a number of years ago. And I think what's happened with the internet and people's work schedules, that people are tending to listen live, but that probably the majority of people do tend to go to the Progressive Radio Network archives. But if you are listening live right now and you have an opportunity to call, again, I invite you to call me with any questions, with any comments that you may have about everything and anything that I happen to be talking about. And when we talk about relationships, of course, last week was Valentine's Day. And I think that on Valentine's Day, I was walking around the Upper West Side in New York City, and it was amazing. I saw people carrying flowers and cards and balloons. And I was thinking, isn't this a terrific thing that's happening on Valentine's Day? But I think that if we only wait for Valentine's Day or for a birthday or for an anniversary, we're really missing a lot of opportunity to nurture our relationships. Because after all, and again, you've heard me talking about the happiness studies. I mean, it is our relationships, it is love that happens to be the most important things in our lives that actually translate into happiness. So just a reminder, if you happen to be lucky enough to be a part of a couple, to remember to keep the couple at the top of the list of priorities, and not just on Valentine's Day or on special occasions. We need to really treasure our relationships. It's something precious, and our relationships require attention, daily attention. It may not mean gifts and balloons and cards, but an acknowledgement to our partner and people in our lives that we love them, that we see them, that we notice them, and that we appreciate them. So it's important to not take each other for granted, because it's the little things that make all the difference in the world. Surprise card or flower, and you certainly don't need to be spending a lot of money. And it's just because I love you and I was thinking about you, it really does do wonders. And we also need to remember not just once a year, but to keep the romance and the sex alive. I was reading a study just before the show that is showing that more and more people are living in sexless relationships and are having little, if any, sex. So that's something that this has also been a change, and I think it's been very much correlated with what a lot of people, a lot of research are talking about, is a loneliness epidemic. So here we have all the devices and the phones, and yet people are feeling more and more lonely and disconnected. So again, if you happen to be fortunate enough to be in a relationship, also remember to deal with the issues. We all have issues, respectfully and with love. And think about if you're angry with your partner, you're annoyed, you're disappointed, you're frustrated. Think about this. Think about how to say it. How am I going to express my upset, my disappointment, my frustration, my anger? Think about when to say it. You don't want to start these conversations the first thing in the morning or the last thing just before you're getting ready to go to bed. And where to say it, you know, to pick a place and to pick a time when you're going to be able to have a conversation, and to start the conversation with something like, you know, I really, you know how much I love you. But there's some things that I really do want to talk about, because what we need to all remember is that when we're dealing with dicey kind of issues, we need to think about how we can communicate all of these feelings as best as we possibly can, how to do all of this well. The last couple of weeks on the Ask Beauty Show, and also the columns that I'm writing for Dan's papers in the Hamptons and Palm Beach, and I'm also now the advice columnist for the Winnipeg Jewish Post and News, and you might wonder, what is that all about? Well, I was born in Winnipeg, Canada, and there was a very nice 25,000 or 30,000 Jewish community. And my parents used to subscribe to the Jewish Post and News. And it was a couple of months ago, I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if I could memorialize my parents in some way. So what I did is that I contacted the editor of the Jewish Post, who happened to be a student of my mother's. My mother was a teacher. So I sent him a couple of Ask Beauty columns. I mean, I've been writing Ask Beauty columns for years and years and years for various different publications. So now I have an Ask Beauty column in Winnipeg. So the latest column that I had sent them was on happiness. And the column, the headline is Happiness Is. And again, I'm curious. I'm really curious what you think about the column and what you think about really the substance of the column and the research that I cited. Because just think, we are bombarded daily, every single day, and if we're online, probably every single second, with advertisements and hype that are trying to convince us that living in a certain neighborhood, right, in a bigger and better house, and belonging to a particular country club, and having more money and a more prestigious job, and associating with more powerful friends and having bigger investment portfolios and more material resources will ultimately lead to a happier and more fulfilled life. I mean, is that untrue? Constant advertisements, the bigger, the better, the more, that somehow this is going to translate into a more fulfilling life. It would be nice if it did, but the research shows that that is not, and those are not the variables that translate into our being genuinely happy. Well, let's be honest about this, of course, that these luxuries can and do make life easier, but in and of themselves, and this is just not Beatty Cohn-Redis's views, this is bona fide research findings, that they will not pave the way to genuine happiness. And of course, I think that more and more people are finding out that they're searching for happiness and inner peace in all the wrong places and in all the wrong ways. And do you agree with this or not? Because when I first began to treat some of these so-called rich and famous in my private practice many, many years ago, I soon learned that having the mansion, on the water and the private plane and all the other material goodies did not translate into my patients being happy. And these patients, these people were and could be as unhappy and depressed about their lives and relationships as my materially poor inner city clientele that I first began to treat when I finished my graduate and postgraduate work at McGill. And I think as a new therapist, perhaps this actually surprised me. You would think, my goodness, they're traveling all over and they have their planes and their beautiful houses and second homes. And yet, if the relationships were not in a good place, if people's mental health issues were not being acknowledged and addressed and really resolved as best as we can, the perks and the extras, they didn't do the trick. They may have for a day or they may have for a week, but looking in some sort of longitudinal way, the icing on the cake perks, these did not translate into people having healthier and happier and more joyful personal lives and personal relationships. And I'm sure that all of you have heard of Sigmund Freud, and he was right. He was right. He talked about this throughout his entire career when he said the true happiness is about love and meaningful work and authentic connections with people who you care about and who genuinely care about you. So if you believe this to be true, I want you to ask yourself this question, okay? So if you're actually believing that people and connections and healthy relationships are really important for our emotional and physical and psychological well-being, this is the question that I want you to ask yourself. How much time in the last month or in the last week or two did you spend on nurturing your relationships with, for example, your significant other, if you happen to have one, your children, your friends, family members? I mean, what did you do? What did you do? If these people lived in your city, did you think about maybe meeting up for a cup of coffee rather than just Zooming or FaceTiming? If they lived in places far away, did you call them? Did you let them know that you were thinking about them and that you missed them? And even more importantly, did you actually think about finding ways that you could all get together in person? Because in the final analysis, my friends, it is these relationships, it is these significant relationships that really do translate into our happiness or our lack of happiness. Because no matter how hard that Madison Avenue tries to convince us that buying this or that kind of product will transform our lives, the truth, and we all know this to be true, I think we can fool ourselves for a little while, but the truth really lies elsewhere. And I want to share with you the Harvard study that I actually mentioned last week. This is an 85-year and counting Harvard study. So Dr. Robert Wallander, and I need to find a way to reach him because I would really love to interview him on the Ask Beatty Show. He is a psychiatrist, and he is the current director of the Harvard study of adult development. He's written what I and many others consider to be one of the most comprehensive studies of emotional well-being in history. And what's interesting is this longitudinal study, it actually began. So it's interesting. In 1935, people were talking about what is happiness at Harvard anyways. So it began in 1935 during the Great Depression. And believe it or not, it counted President John F. Kennedy and the Washington Post editor Ben Bradley. as original subjects. Now, how they were able to recruit these two men, that I don't know, but they were involved in the original study. So the study tracked an original group of 724 men and more than 1,300 of their male and female descendants over three generations. I mean, that is what I call a real longitudinal study. So they asked thousands of questions and took hundreds of measurements to collect data on what really keeps people healthy and happy. And Waldinger's conclusions over the 85-year period of the study shouldn't surprise you, particularly given the intro that I have given today. And that is that good relationships keep us happier and healthier, period. They, along with exercise and a good diet, protect our bodies as well as our brains. So if you make one decision to ensure your own health and happiness, make it this one. Remember, and I think that none of us, if we really think about it, could possibly disagree with the findings. Cultivate warm, loving, meaningful, and authentic relationships of all kinds, period. And let me add to this and make sure that you eliminate all toxicity. And that means making sure that you adapt and embrace my philosophy of having zero toxicity in our lives. Zero toxicity in terms of chemicals and zero toxicity in terms of people. So again, I ask you, as I did a little while ago, to think about all of the people that you have in your life, your friends, your family, your children, your significant others, your colleagues. And would you say, would you really be able to say that these are good, healthy relationships that you are interacting with on a regular basis? So again, it's good relationships, not the money, not the plane, not the second house, although those things are fun and they're fun for a couple of days or a couple of weeks, but it is the good relationships that keep us happier and healthier, period. Now, the following are 15 emotionally intelligent and wise actions. And I'm all about actions. It's not about just thinking and talking and dreaming and wishing, because you hear me saying all the time about, okay, so what are we going to do about this? So the following are 15 emotionally intelligent and wise actions that you can take beginning today that will help you cultivate stronger, deeper, and more meaningful relationships with oneself and with others. So, number one, communicate the good, the bad, and the ugly. Remember to find the way, find the words, find the time to communicate all of this well. Number two, be authentic, be real. Be honest, okay? Number three, be helpful and make sure that you are honest and also dependable. And all of these variables, I mean, these all correlate and translate into being able to have healthy relationships. Show appreciation. How often when we're going about our daily life, let's say if we're in a service line in a grocery store, as I was this morning, how often do we say to people who are helping us, to strangers, "Thank you so much. I really appreciate your helping me," or "I really appreciate the fact that you made a nice salad," or "that you brought the food on time." So important. And these little things, I mean, not only do they make a great difference, to the person who we're expressing the appreciation to, But it also puts a smile on our own faces as well. Show empathy and compassion, and it's not always easy to do. And don't forget about the importance of apologizing. We make mistakes with people constantly, and yet it is the wise person. It is the strong person who realizes that they have messed up, and to be able to say, "I am so sorry. I'm so sorry for what I said. I'm so sorry for hurting your feelings. I'm so sorry for not calling you back when I promised." It goes a long, long, long way in building healthy and happy relationships. Number nine, have a mindset of giving. And I'm not talking about giving money, giving of yourself to people who you really care about, to be able to say, is there something that I can do? Is there some little thing that I can do today to help you to feel better or to help you to have a better day? And of course, these are the kinds of people that we also want to be associating with and having in our lives. Exercise patience, not always easy to do. Number 11, stay far away from toxins of all kinds, including toxic people. And I cannot underscore and emphasize that enough. Maintain a healthy diet, exercise regularly, get sufficient sleep. And this is something that I think that we all need to remind ourselves about, which is to slow down and smell the roses and look around. And when you look at studies of people who are living in different countries and why they are, living the longest and they're supposedly the happiest, they talk about being able to interact, to socialize, and to be out in nature as much as possible. It has a wonderful, as you well know, positive effect on us in all kinds of ways. And if you're looking at your relationships and you find that some, and in some cases, all of your relationships are needing some what I call tending and mending, right? The relationships have been problems and the problems have not been acknowledged and addressed and resolved. Do not hesitate. Put your ego away. Don't hesitate to make the first move and say, I'm sorry, I would like to be able to talk about what did or didn't happen, and I would like to be able to try and make amends. Because even though we can't predict how others are going to respond, we are going to know. And I think that's what's really important, that we know in our hearts that we tried our best to make amends and heal relationships that were important to us. And in the final analysis, that's all we can do. We can't change anybody. We can't force anybody to do anything that they don't want to do. All we can do is take responsibility for our own behavior and for our own actions and try to do the best that we can possibly do in trying to mend and tend relationships that for I'm sure a variety of reasons are not working as well as we would like. So what that means is that we have to put our egos in the drawer. We have to put our egos in the drawer. And I had a situation, and it happened to me a number of years ago. I had a disagreement with a couple who were very, very close friends of mine in Sarasota. I was actually writing an Ask Beattie column for their magazine. And I had another opportunity to write an Ask Beattie column for another magazine as well. So I remember the day I called them and I said, I love writing for your magazine, and it was actually a magazine called Sarasota Magazine, and they would like me to write a column too. So, I hope that there's no problem that I'm going to be writing for you and also for the other magazine. And these were close friends, and they said, absolutely not. You're going to need to make a decision. I remember I was really taken aback, and I thought, gosh, if these are really close friends, don't you think they would like the idea that I'd be writing for both magazines? So as a result of that interaction, I did not speak to these people for a number of years. And it was about 6 months ago. I happened to be in Sarasota, and I thought about this couple because we were good friends. And I thought, well, why not contact them and let's talk about what happened and see whether or not there could be some resolution, possible resolution. I had no idea whether they would even accept my phone call. So what happened was we sat around and we talked. And we were able to clear the air. And as a result of a discussion that actually happened years after the initial incident, we were able to come together and hopefully we're going to be able to continue to have a nice friendship. I was still very upset about what had happened. And I did not understand how a good friend would not have wanted me, who was also supposedly a good friend of theirs, to be able to enjoy the benefits of writing two columns. But just in talking about it made a difference. And as I say, hopefully we're going to be able to move forward. On to another subject. Yesterday in the New York Times, in the style section of the New York Times, there was an article, Setting Couples on the Path to a Richer Sex Life. And it was written by a writer who I happen to know, Alex Strauss. And she interviewed sex therapist, a Manhattan sex therapist whose name is Cindy Darnell. And Cindy Darnell apparently tries to help her clients find more pleasure and joy. So I am reading this article. And what Cindy really wants to do, tries to do, and I assume on some level probably succeeds in doing, is teaching people how their bodies work, and this is a quote from the article, from a pleasure perspective, and how to identify what makes sex meaningful for them. She says, then she gives them the skills they need to navigate the difficulties that they face while creating a richer sex life that's fulfilling so they can experience more pleasure and joy. And that is a quote. And she talked about her rates, and she talked about some private retreats that she does with clients. So then there's the question that Alex Strauss asks, how are you different from a couples counselor or a therapist? And this was the answer. This is not meeting two or three times a week for years, looking into your child through your past. This is a virtual coaching experience, so she doesn't even see the people face to face. And that is usually 10 to 20 sessions, focusing on your present and on your sexual future. We talk about their history of sex, what's been good and what they're struggling with, how they would identify the challenges and help them see that they are not broken. And together we strive to increase their eroticism with each other and their embodied experience of sex. Now, for those of you who know me, and for those of you who work with me, and for those of you who have heard me talk about sex, because I'm also a sex therapist, I was extremely upset with this article. So I was sitting in the living room with my husband Jim, and I said, look, I have to immediately write a letter to the editor because I was really quite appalled how much was missing from this article. Because if we're talking about how to put the sizzle in your sex life, it is much more than teaching people technique. So this was the letter that I wrote. During the 35 years of private practice, I've treated hundreds, probably many more than hundreds, of individuals and couples who have struggled with their sex lives. And I was very nice, and I said that even though Cindy Darnell, the Manhattan sex therapist, does address the importance of teaching people how their bodies work from a pleasure perspective and how to identify what makes sex meaningful to them, they fail to include other crucial factors that need to be acknowledged, addressed, and resolved if people are going to be able to have satisfying sex lives. And then I list all of the things that are missing from this Cindy Darnell's practice when she's working with people. Number one, and this is something that we all need to realize and accept because it's true. Each person needs to be in a healthy emotional and psychological state. If you're dealing with depression, anxiety, low self-esteem, eating disorders, early child sexual abuse, sexual assault, domestic violence, all of these are going to affect sexual desire, and all of these need to be dealt with by a qualified psychotherapist. And I believe before you're going to be able to get people to learn the techniques. Okay. You can't just pretend that somebody who's been sexually abused or where there was sexual assault or domestic violence who has little or no sexual desire, that putting these people into a situation where they're going to learn technique, that all is going to be well. It's simply not the case. Number two. Our relationships need to be healthy and satisfying if we are to enjoy a satisfying sexual relationship. And this is particularly true for the majority of women. I mean, let's face it, if you are angry and disappointed and frustrated and feeling really disconnected from your partner, all of the technique is not going to make it happen. And this is something in talking with a lot of younger people that has really helped to cement my position. A lot of the younger women in their 20s and 30s that I have been treating over the last several years, they wanted to just kind of engage in the hookup sex culture. And then we talk about this in our therapy sessions, and they are saying to me, and they're asking me, why are they so disappointed and sexually frustrated? Well, I routinely receive emails from these women that they're surprised that they're not having satisfying sex and orgasms with their hookup partners. And my response to them is, why would you be surprised when you are with someone who you don't really know? And why would you think that a hookup would really care about whether you were sexually satisfied or not? So again, in this article, there was no mention at all about the importance of being in a relationship where you're feeling loved and cared for. And yes, there is a difference between sex and intimacy. And yes, you can have great sex and not have any intimacy. And yes, you can be in a very intimate relationship and not have sex, and you can be friends. But if we're talking about sex and we're talking about people, being able to get in touch with their sexual selves and their bodies, they need to be in a good place emotionally, and their relationships all need to be health very healthy. The other thing that really concerned me, I think of all the things that concerned me, this one really stood out as well. This was a really important too, that was not mentioned, and that is the sexual side effects from a multitude of prescription and over-the-counter medications, including a variety of psychiatric drugs, high blood pressure medication, cholesterol medication, alcohol and pot can and do interfere with people's sex lives. And if you don't ask people about all the medicine that they're taking. And to have them ask the doctors, their prescribing doctors, about possible sexual side effects, we are doing clients and patients an incredible disservice. Another issue that was not raised, so you can imagine, when I wrote this letter to the editor, and I'm really hoping it's going to be published in the next couple of weeks. I mean, this, if we're going to be talking about sex, and if we're going to be talking about having satisfying sex, I mean, you cannot talk about it without mentioning all of these other, in quotes, unsexy, unromantic issues. Now, what about hormones? Hormone levels for both men and women can and do affect our sex drives. I always ask if men are having issues with erectile dysfunction, what is their testosterone levels? I mean, have they checked their testosterone levels? And with women, with postmenopausal women, our estrogen levels go down significantly. And I'm not suggesting that women go, or men for that matter, are necessarily going to be going on hormone therapy, but these are issues. These are things that really do need to be looked at if we're trying to gain a complete understanding about why things are not working in the bedroom. For example, I mean, with menopause, as women's estrogen and progesterone, and we also have testosterone levels, by the way, drop, so does our desire for sex and our ability to achieve orgasm. So we need to talk about this. And if we don't know about this, and if we've never thought about this, clearly, if you are seeing a so-called expert, these are issues that need to be discussed. Now, even though there was nothing in this article about erectile dysfunction for men who are suffering from erectile dysfunction, first of all, they need to get a diagnosis. What is the erectile dysfunction about? Why is there not sufficient blood flow to the penis? That is how erections functions. We're talking about blood flow. So questions like, is there nerve damage, blocked vessels, depression, performance anxiety, alcohol, drugs? I mean, these are the things that need to be looked at if we're going to be able to get an accurate diagnosis and then be able to put together an accurate treatment plan. And of course, we know with erectile dysfunction, I mean, there are a number of different things, the Cialis, the Viagra, the Levitra, the Monadate, the implants, the vacuum device, the injections. I mean, there's the, the cock rings. I mean, there are a lot of different things that can be done. But in order to figure out what the treatment plan is going to be, we need to understand what the real underlying problem is. So in a lot of these situations, we're looking at, in quotes, presenting problems. I have no sex drive. I have difficulties getting an erection. I don't like to be touched. These are, in my world of mental health, these are called presenting problems. These are not necessarily what the real fundamental underlying problems are. And that is why people go to experts. They go to experts not to have bandage therapy, but to find out what the real underlying problems are. So, as you can imagine, I was very upset with this article. I also sent an email to Alex Strauss, and I say, we do know each other. And hopefully this will be published in the letters to the editor of the New York Times. And over and above all of this, I mean, what do women really want sexually? And I can only, talk as a woman. Emotional foreplay, and this is a term that I coined many, many, many years ago. You know, I love you, you're beautiful, you're sexy. And of course, sufficient physical foreplay, including manual and oral stimulation. And we need to, we're talking about sex, we need to be adventurous and don't be afraid, even though sometimes people are a little reluctant to ask for what they want. I mean, assuming, of course, that they know what they want. So don't be afraid to ask for what you want because the importance of communication is just so important. Well, both in and out of bed. And remember, you give yourself permission to use vibrators. Use porn and lubricants, whatever turns you on. And something else that I have prescribed years and years ago, and that is making dates for sex. Because if we are always waiting for the perfect time, okay, it may rarely, if ever, happen. And I love the Nike commercials message, which is just do it. And it's amazing actually what can happen if we embrace the just do it logo. And I think it's important, you know, whether or not we read articles or whether with people who we have disagreements about a variety of different things, it can be said respectfully. But rather than just stuff our feelings and emotions, I mean, I couldn't wait to get to the computer after reading this article, to put together a short letter to the editor. I'm looking at the time, and it always amazes me how quickly the time really goes here on the Ask Speedy Show. It is 3:57 Eastern Standard Time here in New York. And I want to thank you all again so much for tuning in and for listening. And I really do hope that some of the things that I've said have been helpful. And, you know, my goal every week is that there's some aha moments that you have that can really translate into making your life happier and more joyful. So I want to leave you with my two usual weekly messages. And the first, of course, is to make sure that you are doing everything that you possibly can to love yourself and to live your life in ways that are in your best interest. It's not narcissistic, it's not selfish, it's smart. And secondly, we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to love each other. So, goodbye, everybody. We'll talk with you next week. Have a good rest of the day, a good week, and be well and be happy. Take care. Bye-bye.